started off my teenage years with a poison in my mouth. Oh, we were too young to be hippies. Missed out on the love. Learned from the teens in the late 70s in the summer of the drugs. Mama's and daddy could never understand their lives were never done.
Hello everyone, this is Alejandro Escovedo from Austin, Texas, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Isla Earth. Ever wonder what jet fuel is made of? So do scientists from four universities working on a $7.5 million project funded by the Air Force and an aircraft provider called NetJets. Jet fuel contains hundreds of thousands of molecular structures that vary in how they behave. And researchers want to know its precise chemical composition for comparison with a new fuel they're developing. The goal is a fuel that produces zero greenhouse emissions. So far, the most promising ingredients for their new fuel are coal and biomass distilled from plants. Unfortunately, coal produces major amounts of CO2 during its production and when it's burned, and biomass fuels require a lot of land to grow the plants on. By combining the two, researchers believe they can create a new fuel that requires only half the amount of biomaterial as pure biofuel production, while still making fuels with near zero greenhouse gas emissions. 10% of all transportation-related greenhouse emissions in the U.S. are from aviation, so cleaning up jet fuel would be a major improvement and would appeal to the public. Wouldn't it be nice to fly the environmentally friendly skies? Learn more at islaearth.org. Isla Earth is produced by the Catalina Island Conservancy with support from its fund for a sustainable planet, because Earth is an island.
I'd like to thank everybody for being here this weekend at Conspiracy Con in these strange and mysterious times in which we find ourselves in this country. I want to thank each and every one of you personally for coming to this event, for being with me now, because I believe that the times we're living in is a time for solutions, an ideal in solutions, and what I present to you today, I hope to give you some more tools, not only to know who's doing what to whom, but what we can do about it. The 20th century was the time for problem think. The 21st century is a time for solution think. I would like personally to thank Victoria Jack and Brian Hall for inviting me and believing in this particular thesis, because the presentation that you're going to see tonight that I'll share with you is one of many things that I do, but it's something I've believed in for a very long time. The presentation's title is called The Hidden Persuaders, The Subversive Use of Sacred Symbolism in the Media. And it is only part of what I do, but a very important part. If we turn to the slides, we can start very quickly, because there's a lot to go through. This is, of course, a compressed version of a much larger study into symbolism in general. But we don't want to be doing some big, heavy academic analyses here. We just want to keep it very topical and give you an overview of what I consider to be a psychic dictatorship in our midst. I'm concerned about what it's doing to us all, but I'm specifically concerned with what it's doing to the young. And we'll address that as time goes by today. We're going to be talking about advertising and the hidden messages, the aesthetically conditioning motifs and politically conditioning motifs that come across in this very ubiquitous genre, this media. But many writers in the past have dealt with this, albeit they've left out the occult tradition. What you're going to be hearing today is a combination of two particular pieces of information, two studies, which have long been disconnected. In your own country, you've had Marshall McLuhan talk about the powers of suggestion used by the media. You've had Vance Packard and Brian Wilson Key doing some fine work. Gene Kilbourne, the activist, all authored people. And more recently, Douglas Rushkoff, doing wonderful work. And I started doing this work when I was 13 in Ireland. Long time interest in the occult, coming from many generations back, but also an interest in art, an interest in symbolism. And I didn't know that in my life there was going to be a convergence of these two realities. It took time. It didn't happen right away. It was only actually when I came across the work of Jordan Maxwell that suddenly I understood what I'd been seeing all the time, that this was more than just skulls and ice cubes. Because why would they be there? We have a connection between aesthetics, the portrayal in art, the portrayal in advertising, and an occult agenda. Very hard to accept for some, but we hope to prove the point tonight. The Western world in general, and America, is what I call symbol illiterate. What you're going to see tonight is a small window into a concept that I've taught for years, taught children especially, and it's just symbol literacy, which is learning about how the universal creator, or the universal presence, the universal intelligence, speaks to us daily. It speaks in symbols, not words. It was so important for the hegemonic authorities and patriarchal bastions to get us off the track of dealing with symbol literacy, that even in the Bible, at the creation of Christianity, before thou shalt not kill, before that edict, in the Decalogue, you have this particular commandment, which is thou shalt not make for yourself a graven image or a symbol. It was more important to them than thou shalt not kill. And we're going to find out why. It has to do with the brain and moving us into what's called a left brain type of thought, a left brain type of cognition, a left brain type of expression, away from the right brain holotropic concept, which was more common to our forefathers. But thou shalt make no graven images. What are the ancient world covered in? What is Egypt covered in? It is graven images of God, graven images of divinity. It was absolutely natural to our forefathers to do so, to portray divinity, to portray the mysteries of being in symbolism. It became a very different edict in the Bible where it says, first came the Word. In the beginning was the Word. Well, I take exemption to that. I'm sorry. In the beginning does not come the Word of God. In the beginning comes the image of God, or Goddess, if you want to be actually pedantic about it. But let's leave that aside for now. I work with the tarot and the divination, which is the archive of knowledge, the Gnostic core of the great book of symbolism. The greater book of symbolism, the tarot, these are the main chapters. Anyone who wants to get symbol literate, because Mircea Eliade, Joseph Campbell, Carl Jung have gone blue in the face asking us to get symbol literate, to become aware of how symbols are used, because they take the soul up. By being aware of how symbols work and art and imagination, we evolve spiritually. But that which can also help you evolve can also help you devolve, can also help you be enslaved. So the tarot and these great ancient Gnostic canon truths that were laid down by our forefathers were done mostly in symbols, the richness of symbolisms, and we teach this. In the occult tradition, it is essential that people become familiar with the role of symbolism and numbers and vibration and so on. One little aside, but connecting very much to what you've heard in other days here, is an interesting fact that what they call the Bible, let's say the Old Testament specifically, the five books of the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, are based on the Torah. They'll admit that. You ask anybody who's in the know, and they go, oh yes, of course we can accept that the Pentateuch originated with the Hebrew Torah. But what these people will die before they will admit or tell you is that the Torah originates from the tarot. We haven't got time to explore this, but this is irrefutable if you do your homework and go to the reference works. In fact, it's the same word. The word is identical. But the difference is that the Bible and the Torah are communicated in words, right? Words. The tarot communicates in symbols. And that's where the big problem is, because you can argue till the cows come home about a particular statement, because now you have a language barrier and you have an interpretation barrier. Well, look, in symbolism, red is red, a sphinx is a sphinx, there's no argument about it. But when it comes to a written terminology, that's when the blood starts flowing, and that was the intention. In ancient medieval art, all the way down from the earliest times, we have symbols coming out of the occult world. We're finding them in the scriptures, finding them in religion. The crucifixion of Jesus, the crucifixion of St. Peter. The entire Bible can be decoded using aesthetic principles alone, or astrotheological motifs, cosmological motifs. The image on the right, for people who do not know, is one of the cards of the tarot, the hanged man. Well, didn't Jesus hang on a tree? Didn't Odin, in the Scandinavian myths, hang under a tree? Didn't Buddha get enlightened under a tree? Didn't Conan the Barbarian get crucified on a tree? I mean, we're seeing this motif all over the place. And science, which has always been doing catch-up anyway to what the mystics have been saying for aeons, but finally they're doing catch-up, and that's wonderful. They've just found that, in fact, symbols are important because, as you see here, it says that there are 240,000 miles of neural threads in the human brain, enough to stretch from Earth to the Moon. On every micrometer of these threads, there exists 250,000 units of information. But this data is recorded only as pictograms, only as composite images and not as words. That's right. The universal intelligence, our phylogenetic race memory of every experience that our forefathers have had, is encoded in the brain, encoded in our DNA, in symbolism, in symbols, composite images. And today we find ourselves in a world replete with symbolism, images. We've become deadened to it because it's so pervasive, in fact. We have the symbols of religion being denigrated by the corporate world. Powerful ancient symbols that we've associated with spiritual uplift are now being used for a different agenda. Jeremy Campbell, in his fine book, says, one important property of language is that while its symbols may be used to bring about physical results in the real world of substance, they need not be used for that purpose. Symbols can be decoupled from physical reality to a greater or lesser extent. Words are not deeds, though they often lead to deeds. Symbols can be manipulated to form new statements and expressions which are only tentative, playful, figurative. Symbols are at liberty to be a little irresponsible and experimental. Now that's a very loaded comment there. In 1835, we have the historian de Tocqueville in his Review of America and in review of the genres that were going on of his time, wrote these words. He said, "I fear that the productions of the democratic poets may often be surcharged with immense and incoherent imagery, with exaggerated descriptions and strange creations, and that the fantastic beings of their brain may sometimes make us regret the world of reality." In 1835. You think that's old? Plato was doing the same thing in 300 BC when he warned about the artists, quote-unquote, this has been misinterpreted by many scholars, but he just said that the artists, quote-unquote, if they're given too much dominion over the mind, there will be a decline of civilization. I believe that he was aware even then of people who are still with us, still operating in our society today. Don't believe it? This is a quote. It says, "I think we are destroying the minds of America, and that has been one of my lifelong ambitions." You can read for yourself who wrote that. They're happy to tell you what they're doing. Well, here's the results of their fine work. Heroin and cocaine use among white youth climbed about 300% over the two decades before the 90s. For African-American youth, it jumped to a staggering 13 times the rate of 20 years before. The frequency of eating disorders in teenage girls has skyrocketed. You're going to find out why. While any of these problems in isolation raises no eyebrows, taken as a group, they are barometers of a sea change, a new kind of toxicity seeping into and poisoning the very experience of childhood, signifying sweeping deficits in emotional competences. But the other side, they say, oh, kids love advertising. It's a gift. It's something they want. There's something to be said about being in there first, about branding children and owning them in that way. And in boys' advertising, antisocial behavior in pursuit of a product, that's a good thing. In 1990, compared to the previous two decades, the United States saw the highest juvenile arrest rate for violent crimes ever. Teen arrests for forcible rape had doubled, teen murder rates quadrupled, mostly due to an increase in shootings. During the same two decades, suicide rate for teenagers tripled, as did the number of children under 14 who are murder victims. Douglas Rushkoff, in his book Media Virus, says children's television and MTV are the easiest places to launch countercultural missiles. The more harmless or inane the forum, the more unsuspecting the audience. I highlighted MTV there for an interesting point. One of the methodologies that these individuals use in their corporate logos is based on the phoneme system. If you say the word as a mantra to yourself, MTV, and say it quickly, MTV, MTV, empty TV, empty TV, empty TV, empty, empty TV. Ever seen any kids that watch MTV? They look pretty empty to me, wouldn't you say? Well, that's what they were being told. The great philosopher and theologian Erasmus said, "The main hope of a nation lies in the proper education of its youth." The others are saying to the children, "Forget it. Questions are a burden, and answers a prison for oneself. Let us take control. Stop thinking. It's too much of a bother. We'll take care of you." So the experts are saying what is at stake is nothing less than the next generation, particularly males who in growing up are especially vulnerable to such disruptive forces as the devastating effects of divorce, poverty, and unemployment. The status of American children and families is as desperate as ever. We are depriving millions of children of their competence and moral character. Look at just the terminology there. We are depriving millions of children of their competence and moral character. Not they, but we. Esquire magazine said kids won't even find out how much their values have been perverted until they hit the high school. And Douglas Rushkoff says we have come to expect hidden messages in our kids' television. But this story of manipulation goes way back and has occult roots. Anyone who's done their homework knows that one of the groups that operate behind secret societies, it was the Fabian Society from Oxford University. It was founded by Sidney West, who again is very happy to tell you what they're doing. He says to play on those millions of minds, to watch them slowly respond to an unseen stimulus, to guide their aspirations without their knowledge. All this, whether in high capacities or in humble, is a big and endless game of chess with ever extraordinary excitement. Well, we got them. They're called the media, but they've been around longer than television, because the word, in fact, if you study it, goes back to Medes and to a place in the Middle East, not far from where Libya is now, called Media. And in Media were the sorcerers and the astrologers, not necessarily negative people, but a tribe, a very adept cult from the ancient world, who specialized in the use of talismans, amulets, mantras, and sorcery. And the kings of the world knew that if battle hadn't worked, or if legal means hadn't worked to get rid of an enemy, or you didn't want to be known that you were getting rid of your enemy, you simply called on the Medes. And you bring the representative of the media in to your court, and he'll take care of the problem, because he's going to put the spell on your enemy, the hex, because they know how to do it. And that's where we get the word Mediterranean, mediation, meditation, and medication, the medics. Study this alone, and a whole interesting subject will open itself up. Because we still have, you see, the sorcerers and the voodoo and the witch doctory. We still have it. Only it's now the techno-shamanism. It's the silicon sorcerers. It's the ivory tower witch doctors. And they're still very busy at what they're doing up on Madison Avenue and behind the other great corporate giants who are only too happy to tell you what to think. Not how to think, but what to think. Ursula Franklin, she says, I picture the reality in which we live in terms of military occupation. We are occupied in the way that the French and the Norwegians were occupied by the Nazis during World War II, but this time by an army of marketeers. We have to reclaim our country from those who occupy it on behalf of their global masters. Interesting terms there, interesting phraseology. Well, these individuals, they do go back a long way. And they have understood completely your psyche. They've had generations, centuries to study it. Their type of sorcery involves different kinds of techniques, but it's still the same effect. Telehypnosis, metacontrast, hemisync, synesthesia, embedding, new names, new terms, but for a very old, well-known practice to get you into groupthink, into subservience, to get you to embody dialectical divisions of which there is no end in our society, to fashion your allegiances for you, to implant associations that your mind might not normally associate, to purvey escapism, rampant escapism, and projection of fantasy into reality, to inflate false personas so that you don't have to be you, you can live it out through the person on the screen, and the excessive eroticization, especially in regards of the female. What we're talking about today has enormous consequences for the women of the planet to find their power again. But just one point, just that little anecdote there, we talked about the endless dialectical divisions. Are you aware of how many there are? And that they're crafted based on a very set agenda to pose one party or one group against the rest. We could explore that alone. We could do a whole seminar on just that one thing alone, of the dialectical divisions that are created in our society. And there are many even in the intellectual academic world, in the function of our own senses, in the function of our own biology. And the two that we'll only be able to really touch on today is actually the last ones, liminal or subliminal. We'll be trying to focus more on that. But as I said, this is a very deep subject. We don't have time to go into anything more than an overview. And I would love to get into the whole concept of the lost language of symbolism and do a deeper work on this subject. But that time will have to come. Right now, we just have to keep it very topical and accessible. Not only do we have those divisions, but we've got a very, very important tripartite division that these media sorcerers use on us. It is the simple division between the three kinds of intelligence that we have. Most people think only in terms of mental intelligence. No. We should know that there is also body intelligence. Your body is an intelligent, vibrant, living thing. Completely self-contained intelligence there, cellularly. The mind, of course, we're familiar with, overstated in our culture to an unbelievable degree. But then there's the heart, the intelligence of the heart. And they know how to send signals and coded messages to each of those kinds of intelligence. When you think they're talking to one, actually they're talking to another, and vice versa. So it's kind of hard to track it. It takes symbol literacy to know what they're doing. Who is the enemy? What tools are they using? They're happy to stimulate you in various ways. They're happy to take things away from you down through the centuries for thousands of years and then replace it with things you don't need. They're happy to make those associations for you that we see on billboards every day. Well, did I give them permission to do that? Did I want to see their artwork facing me or on the sides of buses? I didn't give them permission to talk to me, did I? But they're doing it. Somebody has taken a right off of me. So they're busy telling us what I'll get from them. Things I don't need. Everything. Convenient, smarter, faster, happier. Is that right? But they don't tell you the side effects, do they? They don't tell you about the disassociation, the dysfunctionality, the kids, the teens who are jaded, addicted, bipolar, suicidal, delinquent, sociopathic, institutionalized, possessed. You're literally climbing over people. They used to call it possession in the old days, you know, when the Medes took care of you or the local witch doctor did his piece on you. They used to call you possessed. Well, we are still possessed today. Actually, if you ask any churchmen, they'll tell you that the rate of possession has gone up since the advent of the television. Oh, yeah. The whole theme of this talk is about how we are going to get symbol literacy so we can graduate and evolve spiritually. Because as Nietzsche clearly pointed out, we have the misfortune or the fortune, who knows which, of being the only creature who must constantly overcome himself in order to live fully. So there is a drag factor. There's individuals who absolutely are bent double, working overtime to make sure that we do not evolve and that our children regress, that civilizations are in retrograde. What would happen if a pharaoh came back today? And some of the techniques that they use in this psychic dictatorship are words, symbols, colors, rhythms, light, movement, mudras, which means hand positions, gestures, which have been used for aeons as means of spiritualization, used by cults, infused with mysticism, are now being used on us for quite an opposite agenda. To drag us down into the pits of our own miasma, our own hells. As Carl Jung said, consciousness is a recent acquisition of nature. It is still in an experimental state, so to speak. It is frail, menaced by specific dangers and easily injured. As anthropologists have noted, one of the most common mental derangements that occur among primitive people is what they call the loss of a soul. Take this comment that he's talking about and transpose it to our societies today. That is exactly what is happening, the loss of soul. How is this technique done? What is going on? How are they doing this to us? You've heard the story of the zombie, right, in Haiti? Well, the zombie was a person just like you or I, and they slipped something into his drink. And that is the resin or the potion or the liquid or whatever you want to call it, the solution from the Datura plant. Now, if you drink that, you become kind of zombified, but the next day you kind of be back to normal. So every day, you see, the witch doctor had to continually administer the Datura plant poison, otherwise it wouldn't work. Well, we have the same thing today. Only it's called TV. It's called the media. Every day, the steady diet of pre-digested mumbo-jumbo. And it really reminded me of this wonderful movie called The Devil Rides Out, in which the satanic character is, and he's busy hypnotizing somebody. He says that your will is leaving you, slipping away, and you are beneath my influence. Though your eyes are open and you seem aware, you are in fact asleep. Your faculties dormant, your ability to act and think subservient to my will. That is the agenda. The consequence on the grassroots level is that we are running around shopping malls, busy spending and buying and being busy with all of that. 6 hours a week, 6 hours a week the average person spends shopping as opposed to 40 minutes a week with their children, and then we wonder why we got problems. Research has shown that in the first few milliseconds of your perceiving something, we do not only unconsciously comprehend what it is, but we decide whether or not we like it. The cognitive unconscious presents our awareness with not just the identity of what we see, but an opinion about it. Our emotions have a mind of their own, one which can hold views quite independently of your rational mind. And the demographics have changed since even the 50s of how much change there's been by the advent of the media. The word consumer actually comes from consumption, and it didn't mean anything good. It actually meant to pillage, to desecrate, destroy. And in, if you know, consumption was the term that was used when you had tuberculosis, when you couldn't breathe, when you had no life force, the consumer. Well, before we get to how they're doing it, we got to say who is doing it. So a little recap on the fact of other things that you've heard here is that there is an occult history of America. And these are the individuals who have always used symbolism coming out of the ancient world, as Jordan and others have shown. The man on the left is Adam Weishaupt, who was the head of the Illuminati, whose origin date was May 1st, 1776, quite close to July 4th, 1776, the founding of America. His mantle passed to Giuseppe Manzini, who then, when he passed away, the mantle of the Illuminati passed to the man on the right, who is called Albert Pike. Everyone in this room should be familiar with who this man is and what he is about, because he brought what is called Scottish Rite Freemasonry system to this country. Scottish Rite Freemasonry. And the symbols on the dollar bill are the hallmarks of this order, this secret society that George Washington and other of your founding fathers were warning about. If you go to the memoirs and read it, they were Freemasons, but Freemasonry was a positive, basically philanthropic society at that time and was infused by these negative elements from Bavaria and from the old world of Europe. And they warned against it. In fact, the Duke of Brunswick, the head of Grand World Freemasonry, had stood up in the 17th century and asked for the disbanding of World Freemasonry completely, because he was aware that it had been infused with negative elements of Illuminist philosophy. And George Washington and others in this country did likewise. Unfortunately, nothing happened. And the Illuminati were able to infiltrate this societies of Freemasons, and they're still operating today. And this has a bearing on what we'll be talking about. Here is a proof, of course, just for anyone who doesn't know, that the founding fathers definitely were involved in Freemasonry. You'll notice that the on the Washington bust there, it says Freemason and First President. Now let's read that again. Freemason and First President. Not the other way around. Thank you. Important detail. To go into Masonry, endless story, can't do it, haven't got the time. But the point is, just the word alone, just my innocent fascination with words and terms that these individuals use, M-A-S-O-N, if you actually draw a hexagram on the pyramid, you will find that that actually inscribes. It's been in front of you for many generations, but you don't notice it. Remember Edgar Allan Poe? You want to hide something, you put it in plain view. Jordan Maxwell talked about the scorpion sting, the double scorpionic sting, remember, of the tail? Remember that? Look at the prongs of the banner there and ask yourself something about symbolism. These people have never hidden who they are, so we're not talking like Ken Thomas was saying, forget a conspiracy theory, it's all conspiracy, no theory. Here you have it, at the G8 summit, you have all these fine fellows sitting around at a round table, which is of course coming from the Celtic mythologies of Arthurian legends, with a pyramid in the middle. Here's Mitterrand of France, Bill Clinton of America, Blair, a bunch of other criminals, I'm not aware of who they are. And here's Larry, Moe, and Curly. You think they're all from different parties? Think again, simple dialectics. They're all in the same gang. I'm preaching to the choir here, so we'll not spend too much time on that. But you see, what we have to understand is that the girl next door gets involved too, or what they put before you as the girl next door are people who often have, as Arizona Wilder will only be too happy to tell you, long associations with fraternities and secret orders. Again, the pervasiveness of occultism right in the face of people if they only know where to look. The tarot cards. Nothing negative about tarot cards, nothing negative about the occult. But they're using it. In the cards, in the tarot deck, the major arcana, card number 4 is what we call the emperor. It shows a king sitting in a marble throne with a stern countenance. Now, wait a minute. If you go to Washington, D.C. and look at the Lincoln Memorial, what do you see there? Most statues of presidents are standing, aren't they? Or they're a bust. Isn't there something peculiar about that symbol? Where do you think they got it? It came from the tarot. It has occult origins, the very symbol of the Lincoln Memorial, of the great president sitting in the chair with that type of countenance, has an origin in the occult. One of the symbols that should be well known, pretty generically known, is the famous handshake of the craft members. And in corporate logos, you'll see this constantly. I can only share with you a very small amount of the work that I've been doing since I was 13, but I'm sure that the point will be made that when you look at these ad copy again or billboards, you'll start to see these associations and understand more what they are. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know how that one got in. Anyway, the Masons refer to their own procedures, their own teachings as the craft. If you get into studying the Jordan Maxwell has labored for years to discover the occult roots of government, big business, you know, and religion. Big business, yes. Even the big businesses, they're not the rags to riches tales that have been put in front of you where individuals make their money on the white market. The white market makes up a very small amount of the money that's in the world. That starts studying the black market, not as has been put before you, a bunch of drug dealing gangsters on the side of the streets. That's not the black market I'm talking about. It's the occult underworld, where the main trading and wheeling and dealing of the world is done, where you can get anything for any price. Well, when we look into that, we'll find that there is, again, occult origins. And behind these big businesses, the franchises, the corporations, hopefully we can prove a little bit today that there is an occult origin. You've seen the pyramid, and a pyramid basically has three sides, because the number three is very important in Freemasonry. Very important. In fact, if we look at it, we find that the number three is sacred, and it is the reason why it has been incorporated into so many areas of religious and secular life. We have the economic world with its first, second, and third worlds. We didn't create that, but yet there's the terms. We have the main political parties. We have social classes calling us upper, middle, and lower. Well, I didn't think of myself as anything like that, but here we are. We have these terms made for us by social critics, sociologists. We have the competence levels in sports. We've got the levels of matriculation. We've got the branches of government, the legislature, the armed forces even, and the courts. Three divisions, always three. It's a very important number to look out for. In your Senate, there's three tiers high. The emphasis on the number three. The word threshold. The Masons talk about the entrance to all temples, cathedrals, and churches being called a threshold. That means thrice hold. One of their gods is called the thrice great, Hermes. It's an old story. It goes back to the Druids and ancient civilizations, where they also divided their priestarchies into three distinct groups. That's why on the flags of the world, you'll find the tripartite, the tricolor. So many flags of the world have the tripart, telling you who owns them, who's running. And again, in our modern ambiance, you find symbols of societies and orders using the double triangle, the 33, and the symbol of the serpent, which if anyone's familiar with my work on Atlantis, the serpent comes in very strongly there. Okay, the double triangle of the 33rd. Again, they're not even hiding things here. ABC Towers, by the way, in Los Angeles, is two triangles, two large triangles. And symbols in America, right, let's take it to the context now, coming more to the particular, in your own country, the symbol of the eagle has been explored, and how the eagle then turns up on lots of corporate logos. It actually has to do with the fact that the eagle is the old symbol for Scorpio. Long before Scorpio got a scorpion as its symbol, the symbol was the eagle, Aquila, it's called. And if you look at an old planisphere, you'll see it. It's a gigantic constellation in the sign of Scorpio. And that is why the Romans used the symbol of the eagle. That is why the Vatican use it. That is why the Nazis ended up using it. And that's why it's in America. Because the same gang are running the show, and they use the same symbols. It has not got to do with the fact that it's the bald eagle, the indigenous symbol of whatever. No. It has to do with the fact of the sign of Scorpio, which any competent astrologer will tell you rules power and money. The sign of Scorpio. Again, a very elaborate study in itself. We don't have time to go into it. We're looking for corporate logos. We're looking for geometry. You don't have to look very far. And the connection to the occult. The pentagon, and that shape is suggestive of many things, actually was designed by a high priest in the Ordo Templi Orientis. That's a secret society from Germany, and who was a very close friend of L. Ron Hubbard. There's a big connection between John Whiteside Parsons, who was an advisor to the military, who was also involved in a very high-level secret society called the OTO. Another great book by David Overson, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, proves that symbolism was used in even the design of the cities of America, including Washington, D.C. He says that there are 22 zodiacs secreted into the architecture of Washington, D.C. 22, and hundreds of other astrological symbols. But 22 zodiacs secreted into the architecture of Washington, D.C.? There's only four in London. If you go around London, there's four, but there's 22 in your own capital city. The whole thing being based on geometry and symbolism. When you wanted to write the word Sirius in Egyptian, you did it with the hieroglyphic that's on the bottom right. It was an obelisk, a star, and an oval. Okay? That was how you drew the name Sirius in Egyptian. What do you have in Washington, D.C. in stone is exactly that. The Oval Office, the Pentagon, and the obelisk. Why would they want to do that? What on earth has Sirius and star systems far away got to do with Washington and America's destiny? Why are any stars on any flags anywhere? The laying of the capstone, the laying of the monuments, the whole design was based on Freemasonry. If you don't believe it, there is the proof, because there is the symbol of Freemasonry on the block that they're laying. Okay? Right there is a symbol that is known in Freemasonry. That symbol that I showed you is referred to as the compass and the rule. A wonderful study in itself, and the letter G in the middle. But we don't have time to go into the occult history of these things. I just want to show you how it turns up in logos and corporations. Here you find the exact same symbols of the mallet, the Masonic hammer, and the rule, the compass, and the key. The key is very important because it relates to Vatican intelligence. It relates to secret societies coming out of Italy. And your governor, Al Cecchi, when he ran for governor, he used a very distinctive key as his logo. And in Seattle, you have what's called the Key Bank. The Key Bank. And the Florida Keys and so on. That symbol of the compass turns up in the car company Acura. That funny looking A is their symbol. If you actually look at it properly, you'll find that it is a Masonic compass. I've always said in the writings that I've done on this subject that over 70% of the things that you buy, the products that you buy, have names that don't mean anything in English. Don't believe me? Go to your Safeway, go to any of these stores, and just observe that one day. Of how many symbols and products don't have a name that means anything in English. Now, you'd think that the merchant would want to sell his wares as quickly as he could, right? But we're not talking about the merchant here. We're talking about the designers that he goes to in order to get a logo or get a design made. We're talking about those individuals and not necessarily the merchant. So I'm not talking about this coming from the merchant world. They don't know anything. They just want to sell or, open a motel and whatever else they want to do. This does not originate from them. But Acura, what does that word mean? We also find that in Freemasonry, you have the color blue that is very important, because the first opening degrees of Freemasonry are called the blue and red degrees. That's why you have red light districts and blue movies. Oh yeah, let's find out what's been going on here. But you also have this strange fixation with the color blue turning up a lot. And you find it heavily in the corporate world. You find it in government, but you also find it in corporate world. Just that alone, just take one little piece. Just look at color. Open your aesthetic eyes and look at how color is being used in our society. Because color is very important to spiritual uplift and how color and vibration are used. You find it in the context of America, the dollar bill, or money. This symbol, by the way, is well known, of course, but it actually is the word Isis, the goddess of the moon, concertinaed together in a designer fashion. That's what it is, because this is not a symbol that's new, by the way. This symbol goes back many hundreds of, 20 or so thousand years into Egypt, this symbol that you have for money, of the great S of the serpent and the two rods, representing the goddess Isis, who is the goddess of the moon. That's why coins are silver, gold, and bronze, representing the sun, the moon, and the earth. Just like the medals that you get at the Olympic Games, there's a reason why they have those colors and why money is only in three colors. The sun, the moon, and the earth. Another Masonic motif is what they call the floor of the house. It's basically a checkerboard. You can go into any Freemasonic lodge and you'll see it, the checkerboard. There's George Washington standing on it. It's one of their seminal motifs. It's also why you see it on the hats of the police. And they wear blue, don't they? The blue robes. And the checkerboard. is found on the hats of the police because they're just officiating for the system, for these fraternities. Don't believe it? Here's the Los Angeles Times. Do you remember the FBI investigations, federal investigations into all the corruption in Los Angeles that's still ongoing but started a few years ago? Let's just observe this little article that I found. I think it was Jordan, you picked this up. Two sergeants are among those to be charged in alleged planting of a gun to frame a suspect, sources say. More charges are possible. These three policemen had, you know, interned themselves in a house and were not giving themselves up. But let's look what is said here. According to one source, district attorney officials do not plan to give the three an opportunity to surrender themselves to authorities today. Right, no leniency for the three cops who are the bad guys. They're going to be arrested, the source said. They're not part of the Brotherhood. They're not part of any fraternity. They're going to be arrested like anybody else. I didn't write it. Checkerboards, rock groups, strange imagery. It's been pointed out by the people in the know. Let's just take this one for a moment. I'm not making any comment about the Beatles. Let's leave that aside. But just the imagery, let's study with educated eyes the symbolism. This is a procession to a funeral. John Lennon is God. He's wearing white. Ringo Starr is the sexton, or the presiding priest, who dresses in the black cassock. The grave digger the actual corpse is Paul McCartney. That's why he has bare feet and a suit, his best suit you get buried in, you know what I mean? And the grave digger, he's in jeans and jacket, is George Harrison, walking on Abbey Road on a black and white checkerboard. Checkerboards, Chevrolet, corporations using the checkerboard. Would that sell you on anything? Why would they choose that logo? So there we have it. They are the chess masters, as Sidney Webb pointed out, and that's how they consider us. They consider, as he is saying, that it's just a game. It's just a game. So we need to know the rules, don't we, if we want to play the game with them? The double cross that you see here, you see the knight wearing the cross of Lorraine, what's called the cross of Lorraine, on the checkerboard. And you see that Exxon are also using that double cross, and many other corporations use it. I've had to edit this a lot, so you'll see this double cross a lot. It's from the province in France called Lorraine, and it's also called the Knights of Malta Cross. You might be interested to know that Martin Luther King, who was shot in Memphis, was killed in what they called the Lorraine Motel. They leave tracks, for those who know. The double cross. But one of the all-time most pervasive symbols is of Freemasonry and the Templars is the cross and the crown. They like it because it signifies the means of operation, their modus operandi of how they've gained their power, through the two forces of religion and monarchy. State, you see, and religion. The cross and the crown, or crown and gown, as we call it over in England. Two forms of slavery. Here on California State in Hayward, their magazine here, you'll find it replete with double crosses and pyramids and Masonic symbols, a globe and so on. Here is the Knights of Malta cross of the Knights of Columbus being used, and you'll find that is an ancient symbol going back to Sumeria here. You see that? And this is Celtic, from the Picts in Scotland. You'll see the Malta cross, what's now being used as the Malta cross, has very, very ancient ancestry, as does the swastika and the serpent, many, many thousands of years old, turning up in all sorts of weird places. Wait a minute. First it was the ancient Picts of Scotland, and now we find it on the flag of the Nazis. Here it is, the Knights of Malta cross, and the three oak leaves. Remember the number three being important? The Knights of Malta cross. There we find it on the crown of the Queen of England. So what's the connection between the British royal family and the Nazi party? I don't know. Maybe we should look into that. You find the red cross, or the cross, on lots of areas. This flag on the left is the flag of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. But you find a very similar motif on Switzerland and for the Red Cross. and in other areas as well. Oh, what's this then? Anybody open a book on the Templars, you know, the Crusades, and you'll find that they wore the white with the red cross. And here you have a serpent eating a man. A very old motif, by the way. So let's just again emphasize that what is old turns up in the new, because the connections between what is going on in our society and its history many thousands of years ago is of seminal importance in all of this. To understand the times that we're in, we have to look to origins as well. And look at the symbols and how they're being used. Here's a drink that a company came out called Sobe. But Sobe is a play on words. It's an Egyptian word to do with the god of the underworld, Sobek. The crocodile-headed god of the underworld that represented the lower appetites. A word that doesn't mean anything in English, Sobe. Here we have the Knights of Malta cross, the red cross on Xilinx Corporation. Who is running them? And the strange name, Xilinx, where did that come from? We have the symbol of the Knights of Malta cross. It was also called the Black Sun. And we have it turning up on the Arco symbol, which is again the same image of the Knights of Malta cross, just turned it a little bit to the side. And the word Arco, again, means nothing in English. And it doesn't stand for Atlantic Richfield Company and all of that. What it is a Latin word. It comes from the word Archon. If you add an N to the end of it, it comes from the word Archon, which means fallen angel. Arco means fallen angel. If you are familiar with my work on Atlantis, that'll mean something to you, those who've read that book. Another one of the symbols is the dove. How holy, how wonderful. Well, it's not Christian. It's another symbol of secret societies, because in Spanish and in Italian, the word for dove is columb, right? That's why it's the Knights of Columbus symbol. The Knights of Columbus, or the Knights of the Columb, use the dove as their symbol. Anybody get out the James Bond movie, I think it's For Your Eyes Only, one of the terrorists there, one of the assassins, is called the dove, and he wears the symbol. Yeah, you'll find this. And you find the symbol of the dove on the maces of the Queen of England, and that's where you get District of Columbia, Columbia Records, pictures, British Columbia, Christopher Columbus. Where do all the drugs come from? Happen to be just from Columbia. Why? Because there's somebody called the Knights of Columbus purveying them from that place, and only too happy to let you know that they're doing it. And you may have heard about a place called Columbine High School, the place of the doves. Ah, well, anyone who's done their occult homework knows that the Cagliostro's Egyptian Rite, one of the great occultists from the ancient world, was called Cagliostro. He invented a Masonic rite called the Egyptian Rite. And you need to know about this, because it said it involved a virginal boy or girl as an oracle or even priest. These virgins were known in Masonic circles as the columbs, the doves. They were sacrificial. Columbine High School. We've heard a lot about it, but we haven't heard about the ritual side of it too much, connecting to these old Masonic rituals. The owl is a symbol of the Bohemian society, but it goes way back to the cult of Minerva and Lilith, the goddess Lilith. And the owl is on the dollar bill. Hidden away in the right corner of the dollar bill is the symbol of the owl, because it goes back again to ancient secret societies. One of their symbols is the Tudor rose. The rose is a hallmark of secret societies. Nothing evil with a rose, it's just who's using it and what for. You'll find it copiously used in the imagery of the Grateful Dead. Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead is a member of the Bohemian Society. You'll find it on corporations that have long ancestry. And on tech companies, .com companies, you'll see the use of the red rose, and you'd wonder why the association. Here it is, a corporate ad for Viagra. An interesting word that, if you get into it, it actually means the blood royal, or it means the river of blood, because that's your libido. They're giving you this product to raise your libido, and using words that mean that. We have all of the different cosmetic companies here around the symbol of a flower. See that? These are all the famous companies indicating to you that they come from one source. The number 322 is important in occult circles because it's the lodge number of the Skull and Bones Society from Yale University. Why they use it is, there's many interpretations depending on who you are. Since these people are so involved in symbolism of astrology, not the astrology that's put before us today commonly, but a different kind of astrology. This relates to actually the spring equinox, okay, which is 321, May, March 21st and 22nd, when the sun, which is their great symbol, rises on the eastern horizon on March 22nd. That's one of the reasons why they use that. And the skull comes because these individuals were originally part of the pirates, what are known as the pirates, or the men of fire, who were sent out by the agents of the British royal family to colonize America. They weren't just a bunch of swashbucklers like you've seen in the movies. No, these were agents who were sent under the high seas to colonize the countries like America and to annihilate through disease and war anybody that stood in their way. And they did a good job. And their ancestors then opened the Skull and Bones fraternities and the other occult fraternities that are here for the education of their own children. And they even call themselves the Men of Fire or the Pirates. Pyra, and have the skull and bone symbol, which is the pirate symbol, because that's how they came here. And the number 322 is used if you look at the movie Enemy of the State, when the protagonist looks at his watch as the feds are busting in at the end of the movie when Gene Hackman and the main protagonist are trying to leave. He looks at his watch and you'll see the letters 322. In James Bond movies you'll see this. If you're looking, you'll see that number used a lot. And here in Nike, you see in the flames, this is a Nike logo, don't ask me what it means, but you'll see, this is just one example. I have to be brief, but there's many examples of this. All of these pirate families became fabulously wealthy because from day one they were purveying opium, they were purveying alcohol, and they were purveying other things, slavery. They were involved in slavery when they colonized America and these other countries. And some of them, these families went on to become fabulously wealthy and are still known today. But as I said, they're not the rags to riches companies. Seagrams and all of these groups have a long ancestry in Bushmills. And one of them is the Bacardi group, right? Well, they are descended from these types that I'm telling you about. Here is their headquarters in Porto, in Portugal. Those flames are 10 feet high. And in the middle of there is the logo of the vampire bat with blood dripping down from it. So I don't know what it tells you about a corporate headquarters that has flames and 10 foot high with a blood-soaked vampire bat for the logo, but you can guess what their consciousness is like and the stream of dead bodies that they've left behind with their poison that they've been disseminating for generations. And here in the corporate logos, again, suggestion. They're telling you, they're suggesting to you that these companies that are famous come from the pirates. They do it in a designer way so you don't catch it. But if you know what is going on here and the symbols that are being used, they'll be too happy to tell you about the sun and who they are and the pyramid and the fact that they where they have got their money and what they've been into and who they've been denigrating. One of the ancient symbols of these societies is the claw. I bring this up because you see a lot of motifs that look like corporate logos. You know, these are pretty much, you see these generically on banks, right? Look again. Do you see how that is a claw of a tiger or a bear? Because that's what it is. There's ancient societies called the African Order of the Tiger, of which FDR, Roosevelt, was a member of an order called the Ancient Order, the African Order of the Tiger. And their symbol was the claw marks. And you'll often see a claw like that surrounding the earth, because these secret societies believe that that's what they're doing, that they are, in fact, gripping the earth, owning the earth. 666, everybody's into it. Can't spend too much time on it, but there's a lot of symbolism in the whole concept of the 666, the three sixes being used in corporate design. Here's the old company gateway before they changed it to a black and white cube. They used to use the three intertwined sixes and talk about gateways.
Have you ever heard someone say, "I gave it 110%, and you thought, "That's not true. You can't give more than the full amount of something, and that's 100%. Well, now you can with a little help from some friends of Community Radio. Hi, I'm Kathy Peters, president of the station's board of directors, with some great news. A group of benefactors has stepped up to the plate with a pledge to add a dime to every dollar you donate during this pledge drive. Your gift, no matter the amount, will be matched with an additional 10%, bringing the donation to, you guessed it, 110%. Please pledge your support so that you can truly say you gave your all, plus a little. And thanks.
Hi, this is Judy Ansel. On Saturday, June 14th at IBEW Local 124, the Heartland Labor Forum will celebrate 25 years of talking back to the boss with two of our favorite hellraisers, America's number one populist Jim Hightower and labor troubadour Ann Feeney. We'll have a VIP meet and greet dinner at 6 p.m., followed by a hell-raising speech and concert at 7. Details, advance tickets, and directions are available at